This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Namai, haere mai, kia ora tanakwe, Free FM 89.0, independent community media. Good afternoon, Cosmopolitan News and Views. Blackface at a Waikato RSA. Times to get tough for the CBD homeless. Column comment. What did the French admit to this day in 1985? And we have number one New Zealand, September 22, 1985. And we remember New Zealand in 1983. Well, there was a lot of feedback out of Manamata and their RSA this week. When a person turned up for a theme evening, it was a black and white evening, but this guy turned up with blackface, a wig, a dark suit, gloves on his hands. Doesn't it remind you of something? Yeah, blackface, which was popular in America in the 20s, in the early days of vaudeville in America. The manager said, oh, everything's all right, nothing wrong, nothing to see here. But the RSA later in the week got criticised for the blackface post, and the National RSA chairperson said he apologised for the blackface. It should have never have happened. This man who turned up at this event at the RSA should have been turned round at the door and told, go home and take all this black makeup off. It shouldn't have happened. And times are going to get tough for the homeless in the CBD because the police are going to increase their patrols. There have been complaints about at times they are hassled, they are sick of the shouting and the language, the drugs, etc., etc. Oh, I forgot the music. Better put that on first. They are getting sick of all this that's happening in the CBD, and I've witnessed it. I've been had dealings with some of these homeless. They are just, as words call, dropkicks. They run around the CBD yelling and screaming at each other, demanding money, demanding drugs, demanding cigarettes. We've got to get rid of them. And the police are going to be on patrol in the area at various times. So look out, street people. Times are up for you guys. I know there's a few of them in jail at the moment because of their actions. This goes back to when Andrew King was mayor. He said, oh, we're going to be kind and careful to them. Well, Andrew, God bless you, Andrew, but those times are over. The people of Hamilton have had enough. And one of the streets tried to hug one of the city safe ladies the other day. She didn't want it. It really made her shake, and I was talking to her this morning. She's back at work in the library tomorrow. It should never happen. These people, and according to Senior Sergeant Scott McKenzie, he encourages people to report incidents to 111 or 105. If you went to the police station, I don't think you'd get past the people, the two civilian workers on the desk. They would probably just say, oh, nothing happened. I've been there and done that. Most businesses and workers in Hamilton CBD aren't reporting antisocial incidents to police or relevant authorities, while police say they don't need to know so they can respond. They need to know so they can respond. A police survey of businesses and workers in the Hamilton Central Business District shows that although most people witnessed two or four incidents over the previous 12 months, most did not report it. Are they scared of repercussions from some of these people? We know some of them, of the homeless in town, have criminal convictions, and they do not like being snitched on. I've been called a snitch. Have you? It is 12:45. Let's take a look at the day's history lesson, 265. Yes, we've got 100 days to go before we start singing jingle bells in the end of the year, September 22, 2024. 1985, the French admit they bombed the Rainbow Warrior in Auckland Harbour. 1980 this day, the Gulf War, Iran-Iraq erupts. 1761 this day, the joint coronation of George III and Queen Charlotte. In 1996, Queen Victoria becomes the longest reigning monarch in the United Kingdom. This day in 1989, the death of songwriter Irving Berlin. In 1776 this day, the execution of spy Nathan Hale. I have but one life to lose for my country, as he faced the gallows. In 1989 this day, a powerful RIO bomb explodes at the Royal Marine School of Music, Kent, leaving 13 dead and 22 injured. What was number one this day in New Zealand, September 22, 1985? It was a remake of the old Sonny and Cher hit. This is UB40 and Chrissy Hynde. I Got You, Babe. It's 11 to 1.
They say we're young and we don't know. Won't find out. Before it's earned, our money's always spent. got you, babe. I 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 got you, babe.
FM 89.0, independent community media, cosmopolitan news and views at 9 to 1. I got you, babe, UB40, and Chrissy Hind. Well, over the last few weeks, we've been taking a look at New Zealand. Well, New Zealand, 1983. The first of four generators at the Huntly Power Station Commission, the plant, can be run either on coal or gas. David Bowie in New Zealand on the Sirius Moonlight Tour. He pays a visit to a Porirua marae. Team Kersha Jensen goes missing. She is never found. Charles, Diana and Prince William in New Zealand. And, of course, the young Prince William is given a buzzy bee. Lorraine Downs crowned Miss Universe. Jeff Murphy's movie Utu, starring Anzac Wallace, debuts on Hamilton's 1ZH. We have, and Sundays, American Top 40 with Casey Kasem.
We'll hide.
Free FM 89.0, independent community media. David Bowie, Let's Dance from 1983. He's here in New Zealand on a Serious Moonlight too. You heard the line Serious Moonlight in that particular song, the late David Bowie. Going back to the RSA, this was on the RSA Facebook page, which has said the branch apologised, saying the costume was worn in innocence and the spirit of the night. Excuse me. No, it wasn't. We did not pick it up that it had potential to offend. We've been through this for generations in New Zealand and America. Remember there was a doll called, well, I can't use the word. It starts with G. You know what word I'm meaning. Can't say the what word because it is offensive to many. We strive to be a welcoming and inclusive part of our community and are incredibly sorry that we have fallen short on this occasion. This one of the head honchos at the RSA got, I think he got a telling off from the National. Remember our soldiers in World Wars, especially in World War II, they fought to stop racism. Adolf Hitler, Mussolini, Stalin, racist ideologues. For Germany, how many Jews died during World War II? $6 million plus. Cost a lot more then. Cost their lives. $6 million plus. So, yep. America had this problem of racism and it still has. And we're gonna, if we talk to Gary today, we're going to talk about this because I've been watching some of the Senate hearings and especially one senator I want to talk to Gary about. But America faced this in the early days of the 20th century. Racism was alive and kicking. And, of course, Johnson signed the Civil Rights Bill in 1964. But we had these touring shows. In Britain, we had the Black and White Minstrel Show. Remember that? I saw it as a kid. I thought it was pretty innocent. But it was deemed racist. And I don't think the BBC show any of the Black and White Minstrel Show anymore. But there was a guy he was an actor in the 20s, 30s and 40s. His name was Al Jolson. One of his most famous songs and the films out there. I don't think Jolson is to blame for this. He was on his knee and he sung a song called My Mammy in blackface. Here is that song. This is at coming up to 1 o'clock, the late Al Jolson.
Professor, my song, if you please. Settle back, folks, you ain't heard nothing yet.
Everything seems lovely when you start to roam. The birds are singing the day that you stray, but wait until you are further away. Things won't be so lovely when you're all alone. Here's what you'll keep saying when you're far from home. Mammy, mammy, the sun shines east, the sun shines west. I know where the sun shines best. My little mammy, my heartstrings are tangled around Alabama. I'm a coming. Sorry that I made you wait. I'm a coming. Hope and trust that I'm not late. Walk a million miles for one of your smiles, my mammy.
Oh, what happened to Al Jolson? It's not going to work. Sorry, there must be something on the CD, but you get the picture that this racism had got to stop. Another example of this racism in America was Nat King Cole in Alabama one night in 1956. He was attacked on stage by white guys and probably girls too. Yeah, so it does happen. Nat King Cole, one of the most favourite of all American singers, actors, songwriters. He got attacked on stage at a concert one night. And hopefully, if we talk to our American New Zealand friend, we will talk about racism in the Senate. Here is Nat King Cole.
Ramblin' Rose, Ramblin' Rose, why you ramble, no one knows. Why ramble on, ramble on. When you're rambling, days are gone. Who will love you with a love true? When you're rambling, days are gone.
I did knock off Creedence Clearwater Revival and looking out my back door. Let's get back to the voice of John Fogerty. Let's try this at Free FM 89.0. Yes, should work now. Sorry about this. Pressing buttons all over the place at the moment. We are having a bit of trouble this afternoon with some of our music, but we'll try another Nat King Cole song for you.
Roll out those lazy, hazy, crazy days of summer. Those days of soda and pretzels and beer. Roll out those lazy, hazy, crazy days of summer. Just off the sun and moon and sing a song of cheer. Just fill your basket full of sandwiches and weenies. Then lock the house up, now you're set.
And on the beach you'll see the girls in their bikinis, as cute as ever, but they never get them wet. Roll out those lazy, hazy, crazy days of summer, those days of soda and pretzels and beer. Roll out those lazy, hazy, crazy days of summer. You'll wish that summer could always be here. Don't have to tell a girl and fella about a drive-in or some romantic movie scene. Why, from the moment that those lovers start arriving, you'll see more kissing in the cars than on the screen. Roll out those lazy, hazy, crazy days of summer, those days of soda and pretzels. Roll out those lazy, hazy, crazy days of summer. You wish that summer could always be here. You wish that summer could always be here. You wish that summer could always.
Those lazy, hazy, crazy days of summer is the time to get the shorts out. I think summer's just around the corner. Good afternoon, Mr. Driscoll.
I couldn't agree more about that. It still has the charm of the sleepy village he remembers from 40 years ago. But Pirongia will be anything but sleepy next Sunday when it welcomes thousands of visitors to its annual Pirongia Craft Day. How did you first come to see it as a pleasant place to retire to, Pirongia? Michael Cullen?
We were living in Otrahonga, close to Otrahonga at the time, Mel, and my office was in Hamilton, and we drove through here almost every day. And when the opportunity came to purchase a section here, Chrissy and I decided that's the place we wanted to live. It's a beautiful village. It's got a great atmosphere, and the people are very, very friendly.
Somewhere along the line, you were helping it established an institution. It would be interesting to know if it still functions today. The kindergarten.
The kindergarten. I don't think it does, to be honest. Any profits that we make do go to local schools and even schools in Tiomutu, where we contribute to various funds that we try and allocate evenly. There is a play group in the village that I think still gets something from the craft fair. It's a challenge these days. As you'll appreciate, our costs have escalated dramatically over the years. The longer the days, as when you just set up a stall and went for it.
Are you expecting will go out there next Sunday?
We generally get around 10,000 people.
That's a lot of people.
It's
Who
a lot of people.
Organizes the traffic control?
It is. It's quite extensive because the main state highway goes through the village now. Initially, it didn't, but we have to comply with all the rules and regulations required to put together a massive traffic management plan. We have to comply with the Waipa District Council rules of putting on something like this. We also have to notify the police, the ambulance, the fire brigade, and also the NZTA before we can get the final approval.
Michael, I've just been looking at your little pamphlet here. You've got a site of Mount Pirongia. It's called, yes, released by Tony Kingstone. Does Tony Kingstone live in the area?
I don't know, to be honest.
But it's a beautiful site, Mount Pirongia. And if you're on a high building here in Hamilton, you can see Mount Pirongia when it snows. Yes. There's no snow on Pirongia today, is there?
No, there's no snow today.
And you go
it does
ahead.
Occur occasionally.
You go ahead regardless of the weather, do you? Come next
we do.
Sunday?
Rain, hail, or shine.
After all that trouble organising the traffic management, it's just as well.
Well, it's not only that. We've got over 200 stalls as well. And just a cancel at the last minute will certainly affect them. But we've had instances when it has rained, but it hasn't affected the attendance hardly at all.
Porongia is famous for one event, and it sadly is no longer going. The Porongia races on Boxing Day. Is there any thoughts of ever doing it again, if you can get the right people in to check the track and make it safe? Is there any thought of having the Porongia races back?
I don't think so. I understand they had to cancel it because the health and safety requirements and the costs associated with that was just far too great for the racing club to handle, is my understanding. And as you're quite right, it was quite an event and very well patronised on Boxing Day. In fact, a number of people used to come on Christmas Day to make sure they got a good sight.
Well, you won't be needing 200 stalls to each list what they offer, but what are the attractions of the Porongia Craft Day? Include.
Primarily, it's because they're all crafts, and the crafts have to be made with New Zealand materials. No overseas materials are permitted, so it has to be only New Zealand materials. And this in itself, if you go along and look at some of the innovations, the creativeness of Kiwis, it's just incredible. It really is. And each stall holder's offering is vetted by the team to make sure they comply with the market rules, the craft day rules.
Well, let's hope it is a fine day. It'll help.
Yes, it certainly will.
It's not the only thing on come next weekend, though. There's an interest you have in the Motorhome and Caravan Association. How does that happen? What's happening?
I'm the chairman for the New Zealand Motor Caravan Association Waikato area, and my team manage the parking at the Mystery Creek showgrounds, and we also sell tickets and do scanning and all sorts of things. And I've got about 60 volunteers involved in that, which is really, really excellent, because it allows us to raise some funds for our association, our area, and it's rapidly becoming not just the show, but it's becoming a very social weekend, because the anyone with a motorhome and caravan can go to the show and go into the park and stay area, and it costs them $10 for a four-day weekend. So it's very attractive.
Oh, yeah.
I think the most we've parked is 1,800 motorhomes and caravans.
I grew up in Kaipaki and Mystery Creek, so I know the area well. So it's a good little area for four days, and lots of history in that particular area.
Absolutely, yes.
And not content with the organisations you already serve, you managed to find a role in Grey Power.
Yes, I'm president of Grey Power in Te Amuru as well.
Well,
we work alongside our seniors in the Te Amuru area, working with the Waipa District Council to do whatever we can to make it a better and safer place for not only our members, but the seniors in the Te Amuru area.
Mel and I were in Te Amuru about 4 weeks ago. What a lovely little town.
It is.
And keep it up.
It'll be all happening, won't it, next Sunday?
It certainly will in Porongia.
Porongia Craft Day. It's an annual event. Thanks, Michael.
It's
Michael
a pleasure. Michael Cullen. Yeah, no, famous name in New Zealand. Of course, the late Sir Dr. Michael Cullen was a Labour MP and minister in the Helen Clark ministry. Let's try the song again from the Creedence Clearwater Revival.
Do, 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 looking out my back door.
knocking out my back door. Time to talk American politics. Good afternoon, Gary Schofield.
Good afternoon, Bruce. Nice to talk to you as usual.
Yeah, well, we're going to leave Donald Trump out, just put him aside, because this week I want to talk about a certain American senator called John Kennedy. He's nothing to do with the Kennedy clan.
Yes,
but
I'm aware of him. He's got a very smart mouth, I would say.
Yep. MSNBC reported on September 17, Senator John Kennedy used a Senate hearing to spew hate against a witness who is Arab American. Maya Berry is her name.
Yes.
She's the executive director of the Arab American Institute. Berry was appearing before the Senate Judiciary Committee. After the usual pleasantries, Kennedy accused Berry of supporting Hamas. "Do you belong to Hamas?" Kennedy asked Berry. Of course, she said no. Then Kennedy said to Berry, "Do you belong to any other institutions?" And at the end of the rhetoric between Berry and Kennedy, "Do you follow Hezbollah?" Of course, there was a denial on that. Berry said it was extraordinarily disappointing. At the end of the rhetoric, Kennedy said this to Berry.
So that I understand the background to this, and I know you do a great job of following these cases, but was Berry in a situation of supporting an end to the war in Gaza?
I think
how this links to her case?
I think what happened was there were some UN employees who were caught helping some of the Palestinians.
Yes, I do remember that issue.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
Indeed.
But at the end of the rhetoric, Kennedy said to Berry, "You should put your head in a bag." And this is on C-SPAN. This was blatant racism. Gary?
I'm not sure how that equates to racism, other than an attack on her as a person. When you say put her head in the bag, or that's a quote, I'd just like to give another quote.
Yes.
In defense of the issue, and that is from our own Robert Patman, who is our international expert. He's a New Zealander. He speaks out very broadly on this issue of the Gaza war, and he has said that it is a stain on us,
mm-hmm.
meaning, of course, it's a blood stain on us, every country in the international community. That's his way of assessing it. So, yes, whether or not this lady was involved in the actual implication or being involved in that conflict, separate again to that issue, is that I have been very disturbed by you. You know, just because you are against that war doesn't mean that you're against or you're taking a side in that war. You can be for international law, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, do explain to me how it's racist to say, I mean, I know, I understand that it is an insult and a terrible thing to say to anyone. How is that a racist
insult? This is from this MSNBC report. Senator, no, they saw it as racism. This is I'm quoting MSNBC.
Yes, but you can tell anyone from any race to put their head in the bag.
I know.
This is where we come to this issue, and I'm glad you brought it up. You know, the issue of hate speech, and we have to be careful that it's much better to have hate speech ridiculed and dismissed and intellectually jeered at and all the rest of it than it is to put people in jail for it, because then the big temptation is that it becomes political and you can direct it at people as an attack, for example.
Yep.
You know, say this is a racist thing to say.
Yeah, no, I do know that some of Kennedy's fellow senators on the right, they weren't happy about Kennedy's rhetoric on that day.
Yes, that's very strong rhetoric. And by the way, when I was saying he was a smart mouth, I was meaning it in a light-hearted way, but also because I've seen him say some very clever things as well in some of those hearings.
Yep.
But that is a fairly brutal thing to say, and I do agree with you on that.
Yep. Another senator, it yep. has come out, Matt Gaetz, who you remember was at the conference.
Well.
Did he have Botox on that night? But an old case has arisen, and he could be in trouble because it's alleged he was there when there was an underage teenage girl, 17 years old, and Matt Gaetz is involved in this particular case, allegedly. That has arisen again, and he could be in trouble. So,
But as you know, this is election time, and some attacks can be political. I'd go as far as to say that. So we have to be careful for the actual evidence of things. But
yep.
yes, and if you don't mind, I'd just like to go back very quickly
yes.
to our last week, because there is a follow-up issue on that one topic I did want to get out of the way, and that was, as we discussed, that Biden had blinked on the issue of giving permission to use weaponry like this in deep strikes against Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And we considered that he blinked. I wish to to present my own theory.
Yes, go for it.
That, in fact, he didn't blink. So, and here is my evidence for that. So, you have heard of that extraordinary strike against the ammo depot. Now, that ammo depot is actually closer to Moscow than it is to the front line, and it's closer to Latvia than it is to the front line, which is a NATO country. Now, we have at this explosion on a par with a nuclear weapon. So, in other words, it actually created an earthquake. It was such a huge blast. Now, every media in the world has come out without questioning and said that's a drone strike, and certainly there were drones involved in that attack. However, this is a hardened bunker situation. These bunkers are built, bear in mind the mentality of the Soviet Union and of Russia, they're built to last or to protect against a nuclear blast. Not a direct one, but one in that region. So what you would need for that operation would be bunker-busting bombs that we're actually discussing with Biden about permission to use. So I suspect, and I suspect the drones to be a cover for those four missiles that were actually used to create that effect. It seems like quite a coincidence otherwise. So therefore, we're in a position where President Biden has decided to step back from being president, as he said, and he wishes to focus more on making decisions in the Ukraine war. Well, it's a little worrying, at least to me, that if he's not competent to run for president, and now he's making decisions on the future of humanity if he gets this wrong. So that's my follow-up from last week's question.
Always watching the developments concerning that other country of which you are a citizen, the United States, whose policy so much affects our own. Something else you've spoken on in the past, I believe, Gary,
yes,
is the effect of lack of competition allowing the market to go haywire, shall we say, and that to some extent, has happened on our New Zealand electricity supply. How do you see it?
Well, in terms of that, I can't help notice, as all New Zealanders do with the prices of everything that we are experiencing. And I can't help drawing to your attention that every economist and people in the media and yourself, all of us are discussing this as inflation. You hear the word inflation. Well, I remember inflation from the 70s, and that's when prices were pushed up by wages, which again spiral up into prices which push wages up, and there's a spiral. That's what we experienced in the 70s and 80s. This seems to be price inflation that we are suffering. And it's just amusing to me that economists, and we've all decided the word is inflation, but to answer your question about the United States, I can't help but look at some parallels between the United States and our country here in New Zealand. And that comes down to the importance of having competition. After all, we're a food-producing country that is paying a great deal of money for food when we go to the supermarkets, and a very small funnel of competition with, you know, that you could count on one hand.
Yep.
So I would like to draw your attention to the Sherman Act of 1890. And in the United States, we think of the United States as being backwards in some things and forwards in other things. Well, you know, they've got the run on us here because this is 1890s. You should look this up. And this is antitrust legislation that made unfair competitive practices actually illegal. So I know there was some talk about, you know, it wouldn't matter if you fined some of these companies for doing, you know, uncompetitive things, because they could pass that on to the consumer. Well, if it really has got that bad that they can do that, then things need to be taken in hand now by a competent government, both governments on both sides, sign something like the Sherman Act and enforce it. Because, look, we're losing companies that are citing the cost of electricity, for example, which has gone up hundreds of percent increase since they've been privatized, you know, from being government-owned, which, you know, basically we, as our, you know, pioneering ancestry, built all that infrastructure that mostly that we use now in the power. So I just think it would be good to have some legislation to shape a better course for the future of our prices.
Yep. What happened this week, of course, here in New Zealand, the gross national product fell about a couple of percentage points. And, of course, we now, according to some commentators, are technically in a recession.
Technically, well, the future is dependent on what we do now. And as any student of history will tell you, it's also dependent on what we did then.
Yep.
So you can't delay in some of the action, and you have to be forward thinking, yep, and you have to understand where mistakes go. And coming back to the last topic I was talking about, Russia has now mobilized to 2 million troops. That's the goal for its latest mobilization. And going back to World War One, there were two things that caused World War One, despite all the propaganda and nonsense you get told at school. The real reason for World War One was the collapse of the Ottoman Empire, which, interestingly, that's why Britain, you know, and who will inherit it? Britain got Palestine, and that's another issue that we have from that. And the second thing that caused an irreversible rush to war was when a country mobilized. When one country mobilizes, they all have to mobilize. And that pushed the world inexorably towards war. And, you know, when you think about it, World War One and World War Two were the same war with an armistice in the middle. So we have to be careful what we do in our current situation, and history is the key.
Yeah, and of course, there was one man at the center of World War One. He was, you'd have to say he was mentally ill, Kaiser Wilhelm of Germany. The grandson of Queen Victoria. So it's all linked together, Gary.
Well, again, you have to be careful that the propaganda doesn't overlap with the real key issues.
Yes.
And the key issue was, who is going to inherit this Ottoman Empire and its territory? So, and I'd love to talk on this topic because they had a plan, the Schlieffen Plan, which was designed to fight a two-front war. This is Germany's Kaiser Wilhelm. And that, but anyway, I'm not sure that you have time for that.
Another time, I'd
like to look at some of the things that we don't understand happened in World War II that was seeded in World War One.
Finally, how was Stuart's aims to get able to practice law in America? How's that going?
Well, interestingly, I had a lot of interest with the Agricultural Department of the United States as the president of Global Concern, and I met with these people, and I ended up trying to get some of these important changes in governance, in reforesting, in having different agribusiness, all that. And it was only after a few meetings with these people that they realized that there weren't that many people in my organization. But I did make some progress, and as fate would have it, Stuart has decided to work for them.
Good.
Which would still entail his understanding of the law, but I think, you know, selling real estate is what he does, and that's a noble profession. But I think, like most young people of today, at least they should be driven to give back to the future of humanity, and that's what motivates him.
Is he listening to any of the podcasts? Has he listened to any of our talks?
He listens to all of them, and he told me that you don't have one up from last week. So where is that?
That's another question.
Okay.
I'm still trying to work it out. Hey, Gary, we'll talk again next week, and we'll have more on the Ottoman Empire. And of course, this led to the failed Gallipoli campaign too. So,
a fascinating topic.
Anyway, good on you. See you next week, Gary.
Bye bye.
Oh, have you got something else to say, Mel?
Well, we'd like to welcome our next guest is Duane Porter.
Hello, Duane.
And it's on the question of used farm machinery and agricultural machinery that's up for auction.
Yep.
Tell us more.
Yes, good afternoon, guys. This auction that's coming up is the farm machinery that most farmers use, and then they wear and tear, and then they put them up for auction.
How did you come to notice the...
Well, I can't mention the name of the company, but it's a auction that it's done through with the finance companies and all that. So
popular with farmers, no doubt, because of the prospects of bidding bargain prices for machinery they rely on.
Yep.
What sort of machines would they be?
Like John Deere, the hay balers, the feed wagons, the rotary hoes and all that.
It's talking big money too, isn't it?
Yes, and what they do is since the farmers get a lot, get paid out by the dairy companies or whatever, they go along and buy all the new machinery, and then what happens is that they cover it, and then about half an hour later, it gets repossessed because they owe so much money.
The vagaries of conducting business.
Yep.
Well, thanks, Duane, for contributing that on our program, Cosmopolitan News and Views.
Here on Free FM.
It's a thing that most farmers go through.
Yeah.
You look at how many farmers go through a lot of stuff in it. And then, time you've got to store it, put it into space, time it goes up for auctions. Some days, yes, it does go up for auction. Some days it's got to sit in the yard for so long, and then...
If you want to buy a cheap tractor, don't have to go to field days and drive out up the hill.
Well, you look at it, half of the scare did come from the field days.
Yep.
And then it came from the field days, and then most of the crowd, like John Deere, Maggie Ferguson agencies, they got so much gear that arrives in the country from overseas, they import it, and then, the whole yard thing is all full, and then what happens is that, they've got no space to store it, and they're storing all the second-hand stuff.
It comes down to a thing and a system. Mel will remember this. Overseas funds. Remember overseas funds, Mel? All the stuff came into the country. And didn't Muldoon ban overseas funds, or the politicians played around with it?
So that's what is what comes up. Mm. And it's amazing of how many dealers are out there, at the field days, trying to sell them all the good stuff. All the farmers buy all the good stuff and then keep all the old rubbish stuff behind it back at the farm and sell it, Have you ever driven out past like Cambridge or Te Ao Miti and that, you see sometimes that half the gear that sits in the paddock up for sale.
Hey, we'll talk more about this next week, but in the UK at the moment, the Royal Albert Hall has been the scene of the proms. And of course, the most famous piece at the proms is Land of Hope and Glory by Edward Elgar.
FM 89.0, independent community media. This is Cosmopolitan News and Views. Sir Arthur Bliss conducting the London Symphony Orchestra. It's prom season in America. Pomp and Circumstance, March number 1, Land of Hope and Glory. Good afternoon, John Terrace.
Hello.
Media, how are you doing
here today, Bruce?
I'm good. How's things? And you're watching the media like I am. And
keeping an eye. I mean, there's lots going on in the media at the moment, as I'm sure you're aware.
Media Matters in New Zealand. That's its name. And its president is John Terrace, heading an organisation little known in the nation, working behind the scenes for better broadcasting. Today, your concern, John, your belief that there's a wave of social media that exploits mainly teenagers, affecting their mental health. Who says so?
Yeah. I mean, this is a real problem for us as a society, because we like to think of ourselves as being devotees of freedom of speech. By the way, there's no such thing as freedom of speech. My freedom of speech is curtailed in all sorts of ways in a democracy by the necessity to protect other people from an excess of freedom of speech. So actually, there's no such thing as complete freedom of speech. But what concerns me here, and I hate to be political about these things, because I think that both Labour and National have really failed us in the media space for some years now, and the result is a mess that needs to be sorted. But most recently, we've had the formation of a coalition government. Part of the agreement between New Zealand First and National was that they were going to eliminate all legislation aimed at hate speech. Now, I mean, this is taking things far too far. Hate speech is defined in the United Nations as any communication that attacks or discriminates against a person or group based on their identity factors. Race, gender, and so on. So we're into murky territory here. But essentially, what the coalition government's agreement to pull any legislation that is aimed to try to curb hate speech, what they're actually proposing to do is to allow threats to rape or kill someone as if that was perfectly normal and perfectly acceptable. Now, of course, it isn't. In our New Zealand laws, it's prescribed in all sorts of ways. You can't do that. But you can get away with it on social media. And people do, both in New Zealand and elsewhere. And that really does impinge upon the freedom, if you like, of teenagers who use social media a lot. And there's an awful lot of hate speech on social media, bullying of young kids by others, what's called sexploitation, which is the sort of monetization, if you like, of sex for the benefit of some of these platforms like Meta, X, Twitter, Tinder, and the rest of it. These things are pernicious and can't be allowed. Now, all this is leading up to the fact. Sorry to have taken such a long time.
That's no problem. I want to talk about Elon Musk in a moment with you too.
Oh, let's talk about Elon Musk if you like. But I just wanted to put in a word to say that many governments around the world are going in the opposite direction from ours and legislating against hate speech as it applies to social media for children. The Australian government, the British government, the United States government, they're all either contemplating or have enacted legislation to restrict social media for children, that is to say young people under the age of 16. There are ways of doing that, of course, technologically, and the Australian government is the most recently out of the blocks. And it's time that we got with the mood of world opinion, which yep. is that social media is doing harm to our kids.
Well, talking about Elon Musk, the chief of X, he recently made some postings about Kamala Harris, and they were racist. And there are countries in the world are going to ban X, which can't be his. I don't know what you think of Elon Musk.
Well, I mean, he's a successful businessman. Now, I mean, we need to have successful businessmen. We need to have successful businesses. But this man has no sense of... he has no value system other than making money. That's his sole preoccupation. He doesn't have perception of what is right and what is wrong, or what might yep. do harm. Or what might do good. His only objective, his sole preoccupation, is with making a lot of money. Mm. Now, that doesn't happen to be something that is valuable. If this man has got his hands on as powerful a social medium as X,
mm-hmm.
which is widely used by kids, by young people, and to their detriment, to their harm. It's actually causing a great deal of mental health stress amongst our own kids here in New Zealand. Yeah.
And it's happening in Parliament too. There's postings that I find on my site when I tune in. There's a guy called Whangarei Tim, and he is using question time in Parliament to... up pops Winston Peters or... David Seymour, or even the Prime Minister, Whangarei Tim uses these, and he puts postings up that it's alleged that Peters and others are attacking members of Te Pāti Māori and the Green Party with some very bad language. I don't know if you've seen them, but...
I've not seen this guy, but, I mean, I've got to say that, you know, there's a fine line to be drawn yep. here. It's not as though it's easy to differentiate between what is acceptable in social media and what is unacceptable. But most of us would recognise hate speech when we read
yep.
it, because it wishes others harm
yep.
directly. You know, at its worst, it threatens kids with rape or murder.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now this is just not on for
yeah.
our young people.
Yeah, no, I did write to the Speaker, Jerry Brownlee, but all I got was a letter back saying if it happens, the MPs can come and see Jerry Brownlee himself. He's got to put a stop to this. I'm feeling that Jerry Brownlee is not a good speaker in that House. He is too kind to one side of the House. He's not partial like Lindsay Hoyle in Britain, who will yell and scream at both sides of the Commons. So,
look, you've opened up a very important debate there, which is the whole question of how our differentiation between good and evil, if you like, plays out in our institutions. For example, in our Parliament, I mean. I've been out of Parliament for 30 years. You know, I mean, I lost my seat in 1990. But you know, when I was in Parliament, admittedly 30 years ago, and times have changed. But nevertheless, back then, there were certain things that you couldn't get away with. There were certain things that you could, for instance, you couldn't call anybody a liar.
Yep.
You couldn't call them a hypocrite. Now, those sorts of that sort of invective is flying all over the place within our parliamentary yep. institution today. And what's been happening in the intervening 30 years is that our standards, I think, have slipped, and we've become much less judicious in our use of insult directed towards other people.
Mm-hmm.
But at least we do have laws. I mean, Parliament, sure, is... I mean, you can be protected if you're a member of Parliament, by what's called parliamentary privilege. In other words, you can't be sued for what you say in Parliament. But elsewhere in New Zealand, we have very strict laws about what you're allowed to say and what you're not allowed to say about people. We have laws of defamation. We have laws of libel. We have laws of copyright and so on. But none of these apply in social media.
Yeah. Did you ever serve time as deputy speaker or chairman of committees?
I was deputy speaker for 6 years.
So you took a partial view of, say, Muldoon said something or... Norman Kirk said something on the other side, you would have pulled them up.
Well, I mean, Rob Muldoon was a very, very difficult man to deal with. I didn't get to be Deputy Speaker until he was on the way out. He was the leader of the opposition following the July 84 election. And he made a target of me because
I
was his member of Parliament.
Yeah.
He actually lived in my electorate.
I remember your featured in some of his books. So
yes. and so he was quite crazy, really, in the way in which he failed to give any respect to the chair.
John, we've got to go because we've got 10 minutes to go. So we'll catch up with you next week. All the best.
It's so good to talk to you people anytime. You're doing a great job.
Hey, stay healthy. Stay healthy, mate.
You are. You too.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, John.
Thank you now.
For former MP John Terrace, yes. Yeah, no. Whangarei Tim, some of his postings are very, very bad. And I did complain, but it went nowhere, Mel.
Fairfield Community Marae at Fairfield College at 3 o'clock next Sunday. The final concert of classical music for 2024 in this beautiful Wharenui, one of the most unusual of Wharenuis. The concert includes a traditional Chinese instrument, the pipa, the first time such an instrument has featured at Fairfield. There'll also be works by Mendelssohn and an almost unknown New Zealand composer who allegedly had an affair with author Catherine Mansfield. The ensemble performs under direction of cellist Martin Griffiths next Sunday at 3 o'clock. Seating is limited to 80 individuals.
We'll take a break and play a song from 1948. This is the late Nat King Cole. The song is called Nature Boy. Listen to these words.
There was a boy, a very strange enchanted boy. They say he wandered very far, very far, over land and sea. A little shy.
That is Nature Boy. That's the late Nat King Cole. Smooth jazz type music on a Sunday afternoon. Good afternoon, Trevor.
Good afternoon.
Trevor's talk.
Thank you, Mel. Well, I saw two cyclists this week. They seem to be getting less and less, and they're riding on the footpath. I know that's technically it's still illegal to do for cyclists and cycle without a helmet. Very rarely the ones I do see don't have helmets on. And I've never seen one been pulled over for that purpose. Maybe that does happen in other streets in the city. So why not change the law to make it legal to ride on the footpath? And then I wouldn't need all these cycle lanes and concrete slabs and rods sticking up out of the slabs.
Yeah, it's tough.
Causing obstructions.
It is tough crossing Tristram Street with me bags of CDs and me other bags that I carry around with me, because you've got to go through the gap in between the concrete blocks coming up Hill Street.
Yeah, well, it sounds like a bit of an obstacle course.
Yeah, but, no. So what else has been happening in your life this week?
Well, according to the news media, in November, gang members are no longer allowed to wear patches in public. Now, I thought, well, this is going to be interesting. I thought when November comes, I'm thinking about small towns up north, for example, where there's a high percentage of gang members up there. And a lot of towns might have one or two at the very most policemen. to enforce the law. What happens if a sole policeman walks into a pub up north in some small town, could be anywhere up there, and finds half a dozen gang members with patches on? Might be out of his depth there as far as getting them to change.
Yeah, trying to get some backup. It's
well, a backup would be some time away, and that would only be very small if it's a far north town.
Yeah. Hey, have you ever been intimidated by a gang member, Trevor?
I've met a few, and they've been very friendly to me. I struck some in the lift at the warehouse. I got in there, and they appeared from nowhere in the lift. And they summoned me up and down, and I said to them, if this lift was in the Burj Khalifa, by the time we got to the ground floor, we'd be old pensioners. They looked at me perplexed in their eyes. And I clarified, the Burj Khalifa, I said to them, is the world's tallest buildings in Dubai. Still, they looked a bit perplexed and glaring hard at me. By the time we got to ground level, the penny clicked and they roared and laughed and patted me on the shoulder and walked on their way.
Yeah, I've met a few gang members. They were friendly enough, but then you get the ones with the bulldog tattoos on the, and that is time just to walk away. They are intimidating. I know what this current government is trying to do. They want to make people feel safe. And yeah, the police, as I said earlier, the police in the CBD are going to get tougher on some of these street people, because there have been a lot of incidents in the last week or so. A person I know, and Mel knows, she was one of these street people, came up to give her a hug, and I find that's an assault. That's an assault on a person who's out doing their job, and she didn't know that. She was scared for a couple of days.
Yeah.
And I talked to her this morning. She's fine. She's coming back into the CBD tomorrow. But we don't need this. And we're going to have police. We're going to see more police on patrol around the CBD, which is good for the people of the businessmen of Hamilton and women. Like the manager of the BNZ, she's had enough of the streeties hanging around her premises.
Well, it's going to increase because a lot of the motels now are shutting their doors on the homeless now, and emergency housing will become less and less. So this will probably escalate the problem of where they're going to hang out.
Anyway, thank you, Trevor, for your talk. It's nearly afternoon tea time. I think we'll leave with you with some John Philip Sousa. Here's Arthur Fiedler and the Boston Pop Symphony Orchestra. You know it is the theme to Monty Python's Flying Circus. This is the Sousa March. Of course, it's the Liberty Bell. So we're out of here. Bye-bye for now.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.